Good evening. This is Mae Brussel on KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. It's broadcast number 567, October 18th, 1982. I apologize for the delay in tape. We had trouble with the recording machinery that was taped off the air Monday night, and I had to do the broadcast over, and then there was a hum using a different machine and different microphones, and had to do it one more time over. This happened 3 or 4 years ago where we had a mechanical breakdown on two different machines. I don't know what's happening, but that's what happened. But we'll get on with the news, and it's the same news that got Monday night, except that I have to redo the broadcast for you, and we'll use the same information, and I will not even update it with the latest news the past 2 days. We'll pick it up next week. It's broadcast number 567, October the 18th, 1982. I want to make a correction right away from last week's error. There was an error that I have not made, I don't think, very often. This is my 12th year of broadcasting. I confused the name of Gene Hackman at 20th Century Fox with Gary Hagman, the son of Mary Martin. That's broadcast number 566, October the 11th. I was talking about the dangers of 20th Century Fox and giving the quotation last week from Forbes magazine. It was a quotation of the chairman of Fox Studio, Dennis Stanfill, before the studio was sold to Marvin Davis. It was right at the period of the transactions. He said if 20th Century Fox's recent management of Hevel were filmed, it would be too bloody for your kids to see. I was referring to Grace Kelly being on the board of directors of 20th Century Fox, and also the attorney, it's for Gene Hackman and for Marlon Brando, Norman Gary, and his suspicious death just last August. He worked for various persons under investigation at 20th Century Fox at the present time. Marlon Brando made the movie The Formula. It was a candied-down and censored version of the I.G. Farben oil monopoly, but he did star in that part, and it made it last year for MGM. And Steve Sagan, who wrote the book The Circle, said that Vic Morrow, who died in the helicopter crash, I've done some broadcasts on that, that Morrow advised him on how to finish off his book, The Circle, which was about Korea Gate, the Korean CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, the narcotic dealings of the CIA and the Korean CIA, and Henry Kissinger. Henry Kissinger is on the board of directors of 20th Century Fox also, and I mentioned Mr. Landis, the director of two movies of John Belushi's, The Animal House, The Blues Brothers, and Belushi's recent demise in Hollywood under circumstances that are now being opened up and investigated again, that the LAPD was satisfied to cover up. So there's been these deaths around the studio, Grace Kelly, Norman Gary, Vic Morrow, and John Belushi, and the comments of the head of 20th Century Fox and how bloody it was to be around there in this particular time period. Now, that doesn't make excuse for the wrong names, but I'm sorry about that. It wasn't Larry Hagman. On broadcast number 562, that was August the 13th, 1982, the title of one of the subjects that week was The Skin Competitors with a question mark, having to do with the near-fatal car crash of Janet Gaynor and Mary Martin. One person did die in that particular crash. And a month later, Time Magazine had a story under Economy and Business, Shakeout in the Skin Game, The Recession Squeezes Some of the Big Names in Cosmetics. So as I referred last week to the Tylenol or the Bayer Aspirin War, and I'll go into more of that in a moment, there are corporations fighting each other. And in every case where I study the details of these particular controversies, there are many suspicious deaths that are taking place involving persons having a deciding profit or a position in that competition market. I do want to do a resume each week of what happened, not a resume, but maybe 1 minute time of what happened a year ago, this past year ago. The weeks go so fast and the months go fast, and a year leaves a lot of unanswered investigations that never do get opened up, but they are worth remembering. And if we do this once a year, it'll be a resume for 1 minute of what passed the last year and what's going on now. Just a year ago, October 18th, 1981, I was talking about the Greek connections to the pressure of the administration to tighten down on identification of CIA agents, the murder of an agent chief in Greece, Mr. Welch, and the indication that he was murdered by the CIA for the purposes later of enacting laws whereby it would be a crime to mention the names of the CIA agents, even if they themselves had committed crimes, and to stop the Freedom of Information Act and to have a ban on disclosing the identity of agents. We went into the Greek connections to Richard Helms, to Frank Turple, Edwin Wilson, and how the CIA murders one of their own agents who is expendable in order to get more laws to protect the current agents. I also mentioned the scandal of the murder of Anwar Sadat and the role that Mr. Mubarak had and Mr. Mubarak's son-in-law, Brigadier General Sabat, and the Egyptian Prime Minister Abu Ghazala, and their role in sending billions of dollars allegedly through the Camp David agreement to Anwar Sadat, but they were actually going to arm the PLO and buying weapons. And certainly when the tunnels were exposed in Lebanon recently, they and the Israelis went in, there were many, many weapons. And there's no telling whether the Soviet Union sent all of those or whether they were purchased with American tax dollars and were sitting in these tunnels because millions of dollars were diverted to the PLO. 1 year later, Jack Anderson had, just 2 weeks ago on his syndicated radio program, it's on Sunday nights, if you haven't caught it yet, on NBC at 6 o'clock, he brought up the dummy fronts in Egypt, the offices with just a doorknob and no one inside, the multi-billion-dollar shipment of weapons, the Swiss corporations, the links of the CIA and the Pentagon to specific people like Thomas Kleins and Edwin Wilson and the former CIA assassination teams. And around Sadat were all of his enemies allegedly working with him in the government. And when the shooting happened, Sadat was sitting in the middle. He got 26 bullets. Mubarak was on the right and Ghazala on the left. They didn't get any. He got all 26 and died, and they took over the government and the arms shipment. I did get a telephone call and a letter from Ted Gandolfo. Many of you long researchers know his name, and some of you may be surprised that I even use it on the broadcast because you don't approve maybe of some of his techniques or the way he does things. I'm not putting a value judgment on him. He is a sincere researcher in what he does, and he has literally devoted years to expose the House Select Committee on assassinations that got many millions of dollars to look into the murder of John Kennedy and Reverend Martin Luther King and G. Robert Blakey of the CIA, who covered this up again for the second time and locked the evidence up, a lot of it, for 50 years. Ted made continuous tape recordings of conversations with every member of the House Select Committee. He talked with Jim Garrison and tape recorded the part left out of the second report that you should have. He tape recorded the non-disclosure agreement between the people working for the committee and the CIA and FBI on what would happen to them if later they told all that they knew during these hearings. They couldn't publish a book on how Blakey covered up with the CIA and the FBI. Now, he has a lot of tapes available. He has 26 hours of tapes. They're on 90-minute tape cassettes. He's got 18 cassettes, and he's selling them for $17.95. That's a bargain if you're a collector. It's less than a dollar a cassette, $3 for postage. But if you write to him, he will send you a list of what is on these cassettes. And if you are interested in American history, in the truth of the cover-up, I think he's done the best job of anyone in the country on that area. And you've got to give him credit for the intensity and the sincerity of doing that particular job. Each of us has to do our own thing. And his is to try to tell the world how Congress continues to lie, that the cover-up didn't happen, say, with the Nuremberg trials or with Watergate or with Kennedy assassination, the Warren Committee or Korea Gate. It goes on continuously, and he has that well documented. Ted Gandolfo, G-A-N-D-O-L-F-O is his name, 12214 First Avenue, 1214 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021. You can write and get the list, and if you didn't get it on by my saying it, write to me. You have my P.O. box or my home address, and I'm listed in the book, or call me, and I'll give you the information, and you can order this, the list from him to know what's available. And if you want, get the tapes. I know that they're worthwhile. I know the tapes are worthwhile. I also want to tell you that I sent for a book that was advertised in the magazine section of the Sunday newspapers all over the United States. We talked about this at various researchers when the ad came out. It's called Conspiracy in Dallas, The Case of Conspiracy with the CIA. It's by Wayne Fairchild, and he said allow 7 weeks for delivery, and it did come 7 weeks later. That address is Fairco, F-A-I-R-C-O, P.O. Box 448, Shreveport, Louisiana, 71161. I will do a one-hour analysis, as I did with David Lifton's Best Evidence, on this book, The Good Points, The Weak Points. He leaves out the Tsarist Russians, and he leaves out the Nazi connections, the Galen connections, the Permandex connections. He has simplistic terms like Lee Harvey Oswald's friend was a Russian immigrant. Russian, you know, Nazi war criminal, father managed the Nobel oil fields in the Tsarist Russia, the Baku oil fields, and their links with the highest echelon of military intelligence and the Galen network. He doesn't make those connections, but some of it is good, and he's got an index of names. It's a book that you can't lose anything for $4, and you might learn a lot, and you do need an interpreter. I'll be your interpreter and take you through it, but I'm not going to do it this evening. I'll do it sometime when I have time to spend about 2 or 3 weeks really being analytical on the book so you know its high points and weak points. But also at that same address, he has a newspaper to come out called Suppressed Facts Quarterly. This is $12 a year. That's a dollar a month, and you can't lose by that either. He seems to have had 45 years of investigative experience. I called Wayne Fairchild. He, as I say, he's not going to put in everything you want, everything you should know. I guess I'll have to write that book. I depend on other people to catch on, but I'll probably have to do it. But he gives a sample of 70 facts that may or may not be known to many people, such as fact 34, the proof that Gerald Ford was a member of the Bilderberg Secret Society at the same time he was on the Warren Commission. Now, those of you that take the broadcast may or may not have heard me say this in the summer of 1964. You'd go to the Warren Commission in the morning and the Bilderbergers in the afternoon. But there are a lot of people that don't know that. And if you're studying secret societies, the Federal Reserve System, the Nazis in America, the blackmail of politicians like Lyndon Johnson and their sex habits, the use of mafia in the OSS and the CIA, the rigged voting machines. That's a very important thing because the voting machines, I believe, because of cases that came up in Venezuela, are rigged and the elections are over for this country. If they're just moved a little notch over, then they can vote in their own Gestapo, as Hitler did in 1933. He has a section here on proof that the voting machines are rigged. And a lot of interesting material about the bombing of the war and dirty tricks in Washington. He has a sample of 70 facts, and I would say if you have $12, you'd get your money's worth out of that. If you enjoy this program, you'll like his newsletter, and for $4, you can get his book. Now, last week, I talked about the Tylenol case, the war, the corporate war, the danger of chemicals, the way John Kennedy scolded Alan Dulles, and then John McCone, the CIA, chemical, biological warfare, ruining crops and poisoning it. And I believe that the conflict of the Tylenol right now is Bayer Aspirin IG Farben knocking out Tylenol that has 37% of the aspirin market. So to update for a few minutes the Tylenol Part 2, there were several articles that were of interest. One came from John Judge in Philadelphia, a world watcher there, long researcher. It's from the Philadelphia Inquirer, Thursday, October the 7th, this 1982. G. Gordon Liddy was on television. Did he play poisoning role? Now, they turn around what really happened, but you can learn to translate even these articles at this point. A television program that was aired in Chicago 2 weeks ago was the rerun of a television show G. Gordon Liddy did when he was talking about his book Will in September, not in June 1980. G. Gordon Liddy was on television, and they were asking him ways to kill that the CIA does, and do they kill innocent people? And he said, oh, yes, and Dick Cavett said, can you give me several examples? And he said, one of the schemes that the CIA had is called aspirin roulette. You put one poison aspirin in with the other 49, and let's say there's 50 in a bottle. One of them is poison. The CIA had perfected that. Now, when this Tylenol scene was breaking, they did a rerun 2 weeks before the Tylenol poisoning on the Dick Cavett Show. They replayed the G. Gordon Liddy interview and are trying to blame the Liddy current interview for putting the idea into this man's head, if it was Mr. Lewis or a group of people. But I assure you that the laboratory studies and so forth, the technology for the cyanide and what happened, didn't happen that quickly. They did the rerun so that they could, when they were testing this random poisoning, they could say the television inspired the man, but the man had a long history of some other contacts. One story from the Los Angeles Times last week, October 15th, Tylenol inquiry seeks to question man. Now, all of you have read in every paper how he was charged originally, and the charges were eventually dismissed, of dismembering a friend of his. The body's arms and legs were cut off in their Kansas City neighborhood. A man named Raymond West, an elderly gentleman in 1978, was a friend of Lewis's and his wife, and this man was dismembered. The excuse for dropping the case in Kansas City was that they couldn't determine the cause of death. But when an extortion letter was written regarding the Tylenol to Johnson & Johnson a few weeks ago, the fingerprints were identical to the evidence they had in Kansas. So if they were identical in 1982, they were identical going back his handwriting and what he did to the evidence sitting in Kansas. Now, remember, in Kansas City, the head of the FBI through this time period was James Hostie, who was moved from Dallas, Texas, the friend of Lee and Marina Oswald. They visited Ruth Payne, whose husband worked for Walter Dornberger out of the IG Farben network, the Nazi spy network. He was the head of Bell Aerospace there. So that Ruth Payne had international connections, and Dornberger did too, as with Lee Harvey Oswald staying in the home with Michael and Ruth Payne. It was in their home where Marina was and where they coughed up all the planted evidence against Lee Harvey Oswald to make him the patsy. After James Hostie was visiting, Marina Oswald knew Lee Harvey Oswald. Oswald had his name and phone number and license. They were very familiar with each other. He was moved to Kansas City, so this is where Hostie was. He retired recently, but in this time period, 1978, James Hostie was still in Kansas City and in charge of the FBI. Now, Mr. Lewis in Kansas City, at one time, he kept diaries. When he was a suspect in the murder of Mr. West, he kept diaries. Now, always the diary. James Earl Ray, Lee Harvey Oswald, Artie Bremer, you know, the master criminal. He has books on poisoning, which is a perfect way to pull him back later. Now, and his wife, Nancy, worked for a travel agency. And this is very important, a defunct travel agency that has other international connections. And the import-export business is important. And the bank account was used in the extortion note, and they had fictitious Social Security names and so forth. The most interesting story this past week on that case was from the San Francisco Chronicle on fugitive James Lewis, because they tried to give him this same bio, originally the loner, the diary, the perfect crime, the mentally sick, and they say he was in a Kansas City mental hospital as a catatonic schizophrenic in the mid-60s. A catatonic is unresponsive. They're in a stupor. And they're not really aggressive or extroverted people. Schizophrenics of a catatonic nature are hardly the kind to have real estate offices, to have tax services, to have international corporations. But this Mr. Lewis had a home in Kansas, and he had three businesses, Lewis and Lewis Real Estate, Lewis and Lewis Tax Service, pretty sophisticated. He's wanted for federal and state warrants in a land fraud case, so he had to buy and sell and have licenses. Then he had the Algees International Corporation. I don't know whether it's IG Farben or Algees. Algeez International Corporation. Import, export company specializing in jewelry, wall hangings, rugs from India, as well as pharmaceutical equipment. He also had a partner and they're looking for the partnership with Lewis in the firm that imported pharmaceutical equipment. Now, you go for that, and you have the bottom line of who wanted Johnson & Johnson to stop making Tylenol. The article goes on to say that Mr. West, the friend, the elderly friend who was dismembered, was a friend of their daughter's, who was 5 years old. The Lewises had a five-year-old daughter who died when she was five. She had a syndrome, we used to call them mongoloids. They have another term for that now. She was mentally retarded, five-year-old child, and this elderly man used to come to see her, the Down syndrome. And Tony Ann died. Just the news this week, they were trying to say the motive against Tylenol may have been that the five-year-old died from it. But I doubt if you go out to kill people at random, like Gigor and Liddy said, the CIA has the cyanide aspirin roulette. Why would a man, if his daughter died from aspirin, dismember and cut up the friend of theirs and take off the arms and legs? What was that for? You know, if he killed one person, he may have even killed his daughter and blamed the aspirin, or under the mental condition of the psychiatrist, be told the aspirin caused your daughter's death. That actually happened with Adolf Hitler after he was gassed in the war and was treated in a hospital. And they decided he had the charisma and was the right person to lead this great Reich that they were building up to fight Russia. They told him that a Jewish doctor had caused one of his parents to die, and he blamed the Jewish doctor for the responsibility of his parents' death. Therefore, he could start making ovens and put everybody in them and so forth. So that they're looking for a cover story, and this is a pretty weak one. The Wall Street Journal has a story, October 13th, Tylenol orders fall 25%. Well, they're supposed to. Another quick story in the LA Times this week about a man in Beverly Hills who was put in the trunk of a car. He's 81 years old. He was kidnapped. He went to mail a birthday card to a neighbor, and he was put in the trunk of the car, and the car was taken away, and 7 hours later they found him. And then the LA Times, a story by Pat Morrison, said, no arrests have been made in connection with the abduction. Now, what will happen if you save this article and put it in your file under kidnapping Beverly Hills, like I do under various titles, kidnapping, I'll put in that section. 5 or 6 years from now, you'll see somebody committing a horrendous crime, and they'll say, oh, yes, he abducted a man in Beverly Hills 8 years ago, but he was never charged with the crime. That Mr. Cato, that went head-on into Janet Gaynor and Mary Martin, had similarly been charged, and the charges were dropped, of trying to kill a woman by running a car into her, a hit and run where she jumped on top of the front of the car to get away from it, and the charges were dropped. And then a few years later, he repeats the crime. 8 years before, the people in Santa Cruz, a husband and his wife, were decapitated and their heads cut off and their hands cut off this last winter, I had mentioned a man named Mr. Johnson in Minneapolis as working with the FBI on suspicious kidnappings at the time of the SLA. And after these people were killed in Santa Cruz, this fellow took, Royal Hayes, took the gun directly to Minneapolis and put it in the hands of the man that I wrote about 7 years ago. So if you have any interest in saving these things and time goes quickly, you'll find that the guy who took this man and tested his expertise at kidnapping just in Beverly Hills last week will appear again 4, 5, or 7 years from now. I have been making fun of the Reagans and the drug program, of course, you know, almost every week now. It's just hilarious. And before he was ever president, I was talking about the drug king, whether it be Jimmy Carter from Atlanta, Georgia, and the Atlanta Mafia, or would it be the Hollywood Mafia with Ronald Reagan, the Vegas Hollywood Mafia. And I gave suggestions on what he could really do if he wanted to stop the drug problems. That was 2 weeks ago, October the 11th. Now, this past week, CBS News had a story which just proves how insincere and phony Ronald Reagan is. The news story by Bob Simon, CBS News, October 15th, out of Miami, had to do with that big net that came down on the drug dealers down there, bankers, lawyers, doctors, a company called Dean International, the laundering service that the Drug Enforcement Agency had been investigating, and they took drug money and put it in legitimate businesses. But Mr. Simon on CBS says this was a classic sting except for one thing, but, and this was tape recorded in Betamax by a friend of mine, The but was that the queen bee spilled the honey too soon. And who's the queen bee? William French Smith. I haven't heard that term or used it on the air since I referred to General, he's in the military for sure, the Senate Foreign Relations, Senator Tower, John Tower, with Grace Kelly's cousin, Secretary of the Navy John Layman, and in some literature they referred to as the queen and the little bee and the queen bee, okay, and their kinky sex in Texas and elsewhere, and I did broadcast on that. This referred to the queen bee and the honey, and the queen bee spilled it too soon. Why did William French Smith do that? Well, you would have to guess, because according to the radio, at least 15 people who would be arrested got off. Now, they could have been tipped off a month ago or a week ago or a day before, and then using the excuse that he gives his press conference, 15 get away. I doubt if 15 could get away in 1 hour unless they were told to get away. And don't forget how iffy and questionable those Bahama banks are, with Mr. Marcinkus of the Vatican quickly stepping down from the board of one of them, and Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon's close contacts down there, and the Vatican missing $1.4 billion in Panama, the 10 dummy fronts. And nobody will say where it went, and it could be laundered up with all this dope money. We've done many broadcasts on that. And the acting head of the DEA, this is still broadcast, CBS, you might have heard it. The acting head of the DEA, Francis Mullen, said it had all gone according to plan. He was satisfied that with the ones they got, even if 15 got away. Well, why is he the acting head of the DEA? Mr. Mullen was the fellow in the drug agency and the FBI who didn't tell Congress and the senators of the mob connections of the appointee, Labor Secretary Raymond Donovan, of the Genovese family, the Bonanno family, the crime families, and the links of them to his construction firms and to his association with them socially. And so some congressmen are holding up the appointment of Mr. Mullen. We had an acting head of the FBI when J. Edgar Hoover was offed in May of 1972, and L. Patrick Gray moved up to be acting director until his appointment went through. But a month later, the Watergate story broke wide open, and he was the man destroying evidence, being told to deep six stuff in the river, to burn his papers, and our acting director never became the director. He went out with Richard Nixon and the other criminals like John Mitchell and Robert Haldeman and Ehrlichman and John Dean and the whole gang. But this is another acting director of the DEA, and they're hoping, I suppose, that you'll forget about the Donovan problems so that he can be the full director. Then Dan Rather continues on the television and says Attorney General Smith and other Reagan officials are going to take a tour to the drug centers of the world, over the Golden Triangle and into the Pakistan's Khyber Pass. I mentioned several weeks ago Pakistan sending $90 million worth of drugs recently into New York City alone. I doubt if he'll get a view of who made the profits and who did that operation, or maybe he is reaching them so that they won't get arrested. Smith may be tipping off the biggest drug dealers around the world. There was a story about the net and the drop in the LA Times also, October 16th, because the Eastern papers aren't carrying this as much yet as the California one. And I can see why California is. They're probably scared because the politics in California, where we give you Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan, and there's Palm Springs with Spiro Agnew and the Annenbergs and the whole nest of interrelated drug politics, Frank Sinatra and LaCosta with Mo Dalitz and Louis Neiser. There's an enclave of people and Jerry Ford who all worked to cover up the murder of John Kennedy and were part of the active part of the cover-up, if not the actual planning of the killing. And they're all involved in the drug scene, and they all live very closely around the Los Angeles area. So the papers are covering a lot about the drug net. This article on the Operation Swordfish says that the laundered money was uncovered in big operations, and here's the cities, exactly the ones we put on the map all the time: South Florida to Los Angeles, San Francisco, Denver, you know, the headquarters of Denver, Phoenix, Arizona, Albuquerque, Chicago, Houston, and New York. And the countries involved are Panama, Colombia, the Cayman Islands, the Dominican Republics, Switzerland, Spain, Italy, and Japan. On side two of this tape, I'm going to make a few more comments about Ronald Reagan and his drug connections, and then we'll go on to some other subjects.